Hello and welcome to The Family Show. I'm your host, Eleanor Rossman, with me this week and every week. Well, at least one of them.
One of them.
Randy's here.
Two in spirit.
One in presence. Mm-hmm. So, Randy, we're still in this beautiful season of Easter.
Yes, we are.
And everything's so beautiful outside, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, the question is that you posed, does Easter matter?
Yes. Actually, I didn't pose it. Brenda and I were out at St. Matthew's in Dauphin for Mass on Sunday, and Deacon Michael Dewey, I think that's his name. Mm-hmm. I'll pretend I have a French pronunciation for it. But anyway, Deacon Michael gave the homily, and Deacon Michael, during the homily, asked that question, which I considered a great question. Does Easter matter? Or why does Easter matter, right? And for me, the reason it's such a great question is that before we try and answer it, it seems as though Easter matters a lot. But then when I try and answer, the answer seems a lot less clear, right? So Easter matters because, right?
Right.
Our sins are forgiven. Well, didn't that happen Good Friday, right?
Yeah.
Jesus triumphs over death. I mean, he's God. He created everything from nothing, raised three people from the dead during his lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but the Trinity may have had the dead thing kind of conquered before Easter, right? And so anyway, I start thinking about it. The church teaches Easter is an eight-day, like you said, an eight-day celebration, right? We're in the Easter time, Easter season. But by Sunday morning, the Easter, all the Easter candy is already
gone.
It's either gone or it's on sale, right? Monday,
that's
we're all
true.
Back.
It's like giveaway.
It's giveaway, right? Monday, we're all back at work, right? Kids are in school. Even the Catholic kids are in school. I mean, it just seems like you do 40 days of Lent, then you hunt for eggs, look in your basket, but then life goes on,
yeah.
Right? And it all seems a little anticlimactic, right?
Does,
got
yeah.
the Easter dress, wore it once, you know, that's right.
Put that away.
So, right. So does Easter matter? And I think, hopefully reassuringly, it does. But to figure out why Easter matters, we need to encounter my favorite kind of Bible story, right?
Oh, the ones that don't make any sense.
That's exactly right. Bible stories don't make sense, right?
I'm finally catching on to you.
Yeah, right? So, well, I haven't caught on to the Bible. So anyway, it's Easter Sunday. All the disciples, holy women, 10 of the 11 apostles, they're all hanging out in the upper room, right? Jesus shows up, walks through a wall, sits down at the table, asks for something.
To eat.
To eat, right? Why?
I know, it seems kind of silly, or you know what I mean?
It does, right? By now, the better part of Easter is over, right? Jesus has been appearing to people all day, right? Has up till now shown no interest in eating food. In fact, at the inn in Emmaus, right, they were sitting down to dinner, Jesus makes himself known in the breaking of the bread and
right.
disappears, right?
Right.
If you were looking for a meal, that would have appeared to have been a great opportunity
yeah.
to get one, right? Do the rolls, you know, you can do the rolls after dinner rather than before, right? So keep in mind, a little bit later in the resurrection experience, we're going to have what Father Gottwald, St. Joseph in York, calls the first breakfast, right? Where the apostles have been out fishing all night, caught nothing. Then Jesus shows up, tells them to cast their net out on the right, the starboard side of the boat, and they catch 153 fish, right?
Yeah.
They drag the fish to shore. No idea how the nets don't get torn under that weight, right? And when they finally get all these fish to shore, Jesus doesn't even need their fish, right? Jesus already has his own
yeah.
fish and bacon, right? He's
yeah.
bacon on the fire.
Right.
Where does Jesus get those fish, right?
No.
Remember, this is a guy who on multiple occasions has fed thousands of people on a few loaves
yeah.
and a couple fish.
Right.
Right? I get that resurrected people can be hungry. I mean, when Jesus brought Jairus' daughter back from the dead, he does tell the parents, give her something to eat.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah, right. So I get that resurrected people can
Three
be hungry.
3 days in a tomb.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
hungry. Okay.
Yeah, we would think. But But again, this is Jesus, and Jesus has proven himself to be pretty self-sustaining on the food side.
Right.
Right? So here's my take on it after all of this, right? Here's my take. Jesus did not pass through a wall to enter the upper room just so he could raid the apostles' pantry, right? So I know the question is, so Randy, if Jesus wasn't after food,
what would he be after?
That's right. What do you think he was after? Right? And I'm glad, Eleanor, you asked that question, because this actually is why Easter matters, right? And this is not the first time Jesus has asked someone in the Gospels for sustenance, right? He asks the woman at the well for
a drink.
A drink, right? He says from the cross, I
thirst,
right? But when Jesus asks for drink, when he thirsts, Mother Teresa tells us what Jesus is searching for is love.
Yes.
Jesus thirsts for our love. Mm-hmm. Father Mike Schmitz has this great story about growing up. And he's growing up. He seems to get along with everyone, has people at school he can hang out with. But Father Mike never gets invited to anything.
Oh, I didn't know this.
Okay. Yeah, right? Yeah, Father, you think he's a cool guy.
He's so popular.
And, yeah, it's so popular now. You'd think everybody would want to, you know, have him come over and listen. But no. Right? Nobody invites him to anything, right? And for a teenager, an adolescent, that can be discouraging, disheartening, even devastating, right? Mm-hmm. So he's devastated by this, right? So after a while, he tries to check it out, tries to see what's up. Why don't I ever get invited to anything? And everyone's like, Mike, because he's not Father Mike yet, everybody's like, Mike, you're an okay guy. We all like you. I mean, you're likable. You know, likable enough.
Mm-hmm.
You're likable, you know, to tolerate, right? But you're just not choosable, right?
Wow.
And I think, because that's what it takes to get invited. You got to be choosable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of us see our relationship with God in similar terms, right? We struggle through life trying to stay likable, right? Stay tolerable to God, right? And, you know, we sin, we're intolerable, we go to confession, we're back to being tolerable. And if we can just stay on the tolerable side, we get into heaven, right? Where God may be indifferent to us, right? Mm-hmm. But it's still heaven. It's not hell, right? But it's never like in God's eyes, we're choosable, really chosen, right? Mm-hmm. That's where we hang out.
Yeah.
But why Easter matters, what we learn at Easter is that forgiveness for God doesn't just make you tolerable. When God forgives us at Easter or any time, all the time, you know, it's not you're back to zero or God forgets your sins or wants good things for you again. Easter means forgiveness means God hungers for your love, right?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't walk through a wall to get a dinner. He walks through a wall to have dinner
with
you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? Holy Thursday, Good Friday. Got a lot of betrayal, denial, abandonment, disparagement going on, right? On Easter, Jesus comes back triumphant. Does that mean he vanquishes his enemies or vanquishes everyone who did him wrong, right? Or does it mean that he dines with them, embraces them, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever notice in the book of Acts, right? This is a sneaky thing, but right? Did you ever notice the book of Acts, scribes, Pharisees, chief priests, all the people who conspired to kill Jesus?
Yeah.
In the book of Acts, they're all gone, right? Jesus comes back victorious, legions of angels, and he blows them all away, kills all of them, right? You're like looking at me like I'm nuts.
I know.
Yeah, right? Why are you looking at me like I'm nuts? Because that
didn't happen.
That didn't happen, right? They're all still there.
Yeah.
Why? Same reason Paul is still there. Jesus.
He hungers for all of
that. That's
love.
Right. Jesus is waiting, hoping, hungering for them, all of them, to come home to love him.
You know, can I just throw this in? Because as you were talking
about... it's your show.
Jesus. No, it's not. when he comes into the apostles and at other times, that idea of having a meal with, you know, we usually eat with the people that we love, don't we?
That's exactly... You eat with your... The most common group you associate with eating with is your...
Family.
Yes.
Yes.
The people I love gather together around table.
That's what a meal really is, ultimately.
Yeah.
You know, it's a sharing. And I love that you pointed that out, that Jesus doesn't overlook any detail, does he?
One of the most depressing things that you can do is to eat...
Alone. Right. We've all done it.
Yeah.
And it's so uncomfortable. If we don't have our phones, we have to have a magazine. I mean, it is. It's painful.
It is, right? And it is for Jesus.
Yes.
Right. He comes back. And what does he want to do? He wants to engage the people he loves in the most social experience that you can have.
Right. And how that takes... not a mood, but creates a mood, really, for him to want to share food with his apostles.
It's the consequence of a mood, right?
Yes.
He hungers for us.
He does. You know what? We're going to have to stop already to take a break.
How could we?
I know, but we'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to The Family Show on Holy Family Radio, so please stay tuned. With a family show with Randy this week.
And Brendan Spirit.
Yes, she's here in spirit. Yes. And we were talking about Easter and why Jesus didn't wipe out like all the Sanhedrin and Pharisees who didn't believe in him. I mean, they're still around, okay?
They are. They're still around, right? And we were saying how that is a function of Jesus hungering for everyone, right? Mm-hmm. That's his response, his being. Right?
See, we're so small-minded, we think like, oh, the heck with the Sadducees and the Pharisees, and, you know, why would Jesus even want to have anything to do with them anymore? But that's not how he is.
It would be first verse in the Bible we edit out, love your enemies.
Yeah.
Do good to those who harm you. We're like, no, that's a typo.
Yeah.
Right? But anyway, I mean, think about being at Easter, a priest, a scribe, member of the Sanhedrin, Jesus is crucified, dies on the cross. How does your experience to his death open, right? What happens? The veil in the temple is torn in two, right? You're sitting around in the temple, right? You've got the privileged place in the temple. You know, Jesus dies, you think you won, and all of a sudden, the veil separate, right, between you and God is ripped in two.
I think that was a bit of a heads up.
Well, that's exactly right. If you're in the Sanhedrin, what do you think? You think, oh my gosh, he was the Son of God, and he is coming for us now.
Here you go. Yeah.
That's what we're thinking.
Right.
Right. Right. We are forewarned because it tore. The only thing between him and us, that veil, the only thing between him and us, the only thing protecting us from him, just tore in two.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Remember the parable of the wicked tenants. Right? I lease my garden out to the tenants, right? I start sending people to collect the rent. They beat him up. Mm-hmm. Finally, I send my son. What's he do? What do they do? They kill my son,
mm-hmm.
right? And the culmination, the climax of that parable is, what should I do? And everybody says, you send your army out and you kill those wicked tenants, right?
Right.
Right? That's what they're thinking. You kill the son, you get destroyed, right? But what really happens, right? The veil was not the only thing protecting us from him. It was the only thing separating us from him. Mm. And now the only thing separating us from him is gone. We can come home now. He can come bring us home, right?
He redeemed us.
That's exactly right. Saul, Paul, Nicodemus, Joseph of Arimathea, they were all members of the Sanhedrin.
Right.
Right? Everyone is welcomed home. It's just that not everyone chooses.
Right. Or
to
accepts.
Come home.
Yeah.
Right? One of my favorite healings, right? Jesus heals a leper. Not the healing of the 12 lepers. This is just one leper. Jesus heals one leper. Happens Matthew 8, Luke 5, right? But Mark puts it, Mark 1, right off the bat. In Mark, it's one of the first things we learn about Jesus. And one of that first things is he touched a leper.
Yeah.
I mean, can
which
you imagine?
Which you don't do.
Which you don't do. Not, you're unclean,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
You got all sorts of horrible things you got to do if you mm-hmm. if you touch a leper, right? Can you imagine if you're a leper, you may think that Jesus will heal you. You're not even supposed to come near anybody, but you may think you can sneak out and get kind of close to Jesus, and mm-hmm. and maybe he will heal you. But you could never fathom that he would ever
touch you.
Right? And Luke just nails this. Luke just nails this. So this man, Luke tells us, covered in leprosy, throws himself on the ground, face in the dirt before Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Lord, if you are willing, you can heal me, right? As if it's a question.
Yeah.
Lord, I know you can heal me, but do you want to?
Right.
Right? Would you want to heal even me?
Yeah.
And Mark 1, it says, Jesus was indignant with the question, right? And it doesn't mean that he was indignant with the guy.
Right.
He's indignant with the question. You're taken back, kind of hurt by it. How can you even ask that? Right? The devastate, you know, the downplaying or the de-emphasizing of his love is painful to Christ. That's why he's indignant. It's just, it's painful for him that the question is asked. Of course I want to heal.
Right. It's a lack of trust,
right?
That we,
you know. Not even a lack of trust. It's that.
In the love. In the love.
Yeah. The lack of trust in the love. My gosh. How can you, after,
yeah,
how
after
can you
everything,
doubt that
right.
love, right? This guy, face in the dirt, hiding his brokenness, waiting to see what will happen. And suddenly he feels, for the first time in who knows how many years, mm-hmm. someone touches him, right? He doesn't see that coming. And he feels that touch, and then he's well. Touched by love heals him, right? How does Jesus heal Thomas's unbelief, right? The story of Thomas, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It is a healing of Thomas's unbelief, right? What does Thomas say? He says, unless yeah. I place my finger in the nail mark and my hand in his side, I cannot believe.
Yeah.
It's desperation. I want to be healed and I can't be,
mm-hmm.
right? And Jesus goes, Thomas, you're right. You're not wrong. You're right. It is through touch that Thomas is healed,
mm-hmm.
right? I was reading these two books on the Eucharist, right? One was written by Father Don Calloway, and the other was written by Matthew Kelly. Both really good books, right? And amazingly, both of these books bring us back to, of all people, Thomas, right? Funny thing, we remember Thomas, quote Thomas, for the wrong thing. Why do we obsess on what Thomas said before he was healed and forget what he said after he was healed, right? What's he say after love's touch heals his unbelief?
My Lord and my God.
That's right. Right? He says, my Lord and my God. That's our line in the script, right? You kind of remember that from the Mass,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Lord, I please, you know, heal my unbelief.
Yes.
Right? What's our response? My Lord and my God, when we're healed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Believe it or not, my mind has a propensity to work, to wander during Mass, right? Bernadette.
Gee, right? I'm going to tell you, you're not alone.
Right, right. So these two books call me to say to the Eucharist in Mass, right, my Lord and my God, right? I am shooting for five times during Mass, say to the Eucharist, not to the Mass, not to the air, not to the priest, to the Eucharist, my Lord and my God, because that's who he is,
yes.
Right? Say it as I genuflect coming in at the consecration, body consecration, blood consecration, communion, and as I genuflect on the way out. Not how quick can I get my hand to move to everybody's like, wow, fastest gun in the West. That guy genuflects like the Flash, right? No. As I do it, my Lord and my God.
That's a beautiful meditation right there.
Yeah.
I'm going to steal it.
Right. If you're going to wave to him, at least say hi.
Yeah, no kidding.
Brenda and I actually pretty much all the Lees went to a wedding on Saturday. Janine here and Christian Stremmel, congratulations to Janine and Christian, right, on their wedding. But you think about it, it was a great reminder. What is the big line at a wedding? The line everyone is waiting for, the culmination of the wedding ceremony.
You may kiss the bride.
Bingo. I didn't have to cue it. We all know it. It's not. I now pronounce
everybody
you man
clap.
And wife. But it's like man and wife thing. Yeah. But you may kiss the bride.
Right.
Right? The perfect prayer is the Mass.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Culmination of the Mass, consumption of
the Eucharist.
The Eucharist. Jesus, you may kiss the bride. Right? That's what it is.
Right? It is.
How many times have you kissed your beloved this Easter season? Right? It's time to get called out. Does Easter matter? Mm-hmm. How many times have you kissed your beloved this Easter season? Why does Easter matter? Because my beloved hungers for me, and I respond to his passion.
Yes.
Right? When the travelers on the way to Emmaus encounter Jesus in the breaking of the blood, how do they respond, right? How do they respond to encountering Jesus in the Eucharist? They respond in two ways. First way that they respond is it changes them profoundly, changes their perspective, right? Before they couldn't recognize Jesus, breaks the bread, now they can. Changes their attitude. They were filled with resignation. Now they're filled with hope.
Mm-hmm.
Changes their direction. They were leaving Jerusalem.
Right.
Now we got to go back to Jerusalem.
Running back.
Away from the church, back to the church.
Yes,
right? It changes their sense of urgency. They had no sense of urgency at the beginning of the story. Now they got to get it back now.
Mm-hmm.
Changes their sense of purpose. Now they have one. And the second way it changes them is it spurs them to action.
Mm-hmm.
Why does Easter matter? Because that's when we pray, Lord, help me to recognize you
In the breaking of the bread.
Exactly. Help me to recognize you in the breaking of the bread. Lord, help me to hunger for you as you hunger
for me.
Exactly. Interesting thing. Thomas missed Jesus the first time around and couldn't believe. So what happened? Jesus came back.
Yes.
Right? Lord, I can't believe. I can't see you as you see me. I can't hunger for you as you hunger for me. Too much has happened. I'm too dry. It's too much desert. I'm too tired. I'm just too dead.
Mm-hmm.
Sister Bethany Madonna, right? Sisters of Life and just wonderful group of sisters, right? Sister Bethany Madonna calls to mind this beautiful image. Jesus heals Jairus' daughter, right? Dead daughter. Jesus heals her. How? By taking her by the hand.
Yeah, it's always the touch.
Right? He takes her by the hand, walks her back to life, leads her back to life, holding her hand. You know, why does Easter matter? Because that's when we're invited, all the time we're invited, reach
but
for his hand
yeah.
because he's coming back for you.
Wow, that's beautiful. I love this. Holy Communion is kissing the bride. It's a beautiful. And of course, we're out of time, which we always are, but we invite you to join us every Friday at 12:30 on AM 720 for The Family Show.
And keep us in your prayers.
For Brendan, Randy Lee, I'm Eleanor Rossman, and we leave you with the beautiful sound of Seasons.